the beautiful Earl Carroll Theater Restaurant in Hollywood. Today and every Sunday, for one full hour, the stars made great by your recognition of their achievements are brought to you by Philco Corporation. Makers today of radar and electronic equipment to help win the war. Makers tomorrow of products for good living in a world at peace. Incidentally, a little later on, Secretary of the Navy Forrestal's speech, direct from the South Pacific, will be included in this program. It's an unrationed pleasure for the reception committee to welcome to your Radio Hall of Fame today's mistress of ceremonies. Her talent is unquestioned. She is a slick chick who has captured top priority with the GIs overseas for the grand job she's done entertaining servicemen in the Alaskan, Aleutian, African, English, Caribbean, and South Pacific areas. She's the featured singer of radio's most popular program. The welcome mat is at the door of your Radio Hall of Fame for the pulchritudinous portion of the Bob Hope Show, Frances Langford, who gets the ball a rolling with. There goes that song again.
For the swell introduction, and many, many thanks for that grand reception from you 300 servicemen and the more than 1,200 Philco dealers and guests from Southern California who are packing our theater this afternoon. I know it sounds like a cliche, but I think you listeners have a rare treat in store for you this afternoon when you honor Ed Archie Gardner of Duffy's Tavern, Nigel Bruce, Johnny Mercer, Alan Falstaff Reed, Ray Everly, Paul Whiteman, and the Hoosier Hotshots. And Jimmy Wallington is going to give you a few tips about a hot shot in any man's language.
In speaking of the future and the rich legacy which war research and production will leave to a peacetime world, Philco is aware that without victory, there can be no peace and no future for free men. So in the Philco laboratories and production lines, scientists, engineers, and workers are continuing to devote all their knowledge, their skill, and their great mass production facilities to the weapons of war. Vital radar and electronic equipment, artillery fuses and shells, storage batteries for military transport and war industries. But in all this research and production for war, men acquire new ideas, new knowledge, new techniques. No matter how much the product of their brains and labor may be destroyed in battle, those ideas survive. And when victory is won, they will bring you new and untold joys from the Philco Laboratories. Finer radio tone and performance. Richer enjoyment of recorded music. Under the Philco name. Famous for quality the world over.
And now, how about some well-deserved whistles, cheers, and applause for the Dean of American Music, Paul Whiteman. Well, what have you got for us tonight in the way of music, Paul?
Well, right now, your Radio Hall of Fame is going to pay its respects to someone I think really worthy of a tribute. I refer to Mr. Earl Carroll, from whose theater restaurant this program is now being broadcast, and whose courtesy and cooperation have done much to make our stay here a pleasant one. And to assist in doing the honors, into the Hall of Fame strolls one of today's finest singers of popular songs. He was with that wonderful Glenn Miller band from its inception, and he made everyone's heart beat just a little faster when he sang such hits as At Last and Serenading Blue.
And here he is now to sing the hit song called Endlessly from the New Republic picture, Earl Carroll's Vanities, Ray Eberle.
Thank you. dust, and spring comes back each year. So my love will go on forever.
Ed Gardner created a program of his own and a character which has won a loyal listening audience of an unusual kind. These are people who judge you as an individual by whether or not you listen to and like Duffy's and Duffy's man Friday, Archie, because he has developed a character which is unique in radio and which has won a vast following. Paramount decided to make a picture called Duffy's Tavern in which he stars. So here he is on your Radio Hall of Fame, the man who has uncrowned the King's English and who gives Mrs. Malaprop what he might call an inferiority complexion. Presenting by courtesy of his sponsor, Bristol Myers, Ed Gardner, better known as Archie.
Well, thanks for that verbose introduction, Francis. I always like obesity. And while we're tossing bouquets around, you know, I like that dress you got on there. Fits you to a T.
To a T?
Yeah, especially around the LSMF. You know, so round, so, by the way. Francis, why don't you drop into Duffy some Friday night? That's, USO night down there, you know, we. Decorate the joint to give it the army flavor, you know.
You mean you hang bayonets on the wall?
No, we just put MP bands around the cuspidors.
Well, I'm certainly glad the tavern has gone all out.
Yep, and Duffy's doing his part, too, you know. He invented a machine that does away with officers' training school.
Oh?
Yeah, you just put a nickel in a slot, and out comes a second lieutenant.
That's very clever.
Yeah, that ain't all. He's now working on even a better idea. A machine where you put in a second lieutenant and out comes a nickel. Yeah, it's wonderful having the soldiers come down to Duffy's every week, Francis. You know, it's the only way we can get smoke in the joint these days.
Well, what about food for the soldiers?
Food for the soldiers? Well, you know the motto of Duffy's. If you don't smell what you want, ask for it. Yeah, we serve nothing but balanced meals, you know.
How balanced?
When you eat one, you got a 50-50 chance of recovering. But, of course, the main feature is the entertainment.
But do you have any Hollywood stars there?
Hollywood stars? Oh, my goodness. The place is, you know, it literally crawls with them seminar stars. I'll never forget the night that Dorothy Lamour walked into Duffy's, you know, in a sarong. Yeah. It was so quiet you could hear the soldiers waiting for a pin to drop. And, of course, you know, Miss Duffy entertains the soldiers, too.
Say, by the way, Archie, what does Miss Duffy look like?
That's a very embarrassing question. Have you seen Shirley, the daughter of Mrs. Temple?
Yes.
Well, Miss Duffy looks like Thunderhead, son of Flicker.
And she dances with the soldiers?
Yeah, she dances with the soldiers. And, boy, does she hold them tight. When she holds a soldier, you'd think he was the last man on earth.
Well, how do the soldiers hold Miss Duffy?
As if she was the last man on earth. Yeah. Yeah, right now she's got a crush on this air cadet, you know.
Uh-huh.
You should see the guy in his... should see him in his flying clothes, his shirt with the propeller on the collar, you know, flight jacket on the wings, and long underwear with the Bombay door. Only one funny thing about Miss Duffy, she hardly ever goes out with sailors.
How come?
Well, I don't know. I guess her old man told her about the birds and the flowers and the sea bees. You know? thought there was a lot of CBs here. The joint wasn't here an hour ago.
So Miss Duffy's really gone done her part for the war effort, huh?
Oh, yeah, she's doing a part, all right. The Army is using a picture, you know, to help rotate the men overseas.
By using her picture?
Yeah, yeah, they hang her picture up in the barracks, and when she starts looking good to the GIs, they know it's time to send them home. Well, look, Francis, do you mind if I hang around here and watch this show? I'm looking for ideas for entertainment at Duffy's, huh?
Certainly, Archie.
Okay.
And... and now, to the accompaniment of as weird a collection of instruments as you've ever seen, including washboards and automobile horns, a quartet of bucolic musicians amble into the novelty wing of your Radio Hall of Fame. The Hoosier Hotshots are not only held to be of the great novelty outfits of radio, but they've proven they can really hold their audience. For 13 straight years, they've delighted the listeners of the National Barn Dance program. They've starred in plenty of movies, and having made more than 500 recordings, the sales of their discs are way up in the millions. So how about a rip-snorting welcome for a quartet that delivers corn so hot it simply puffs? By courtesy of their sponsor, Alka-Seltzer, the Hoosier Hot Shot.
Well, thank you very much, Francis. And now, Hizzy, the time has come, the time has arrived.
Uh-huh.
Fetch up that Monday morning piano.
I got it.
Well, okay. Well, cookie's all ready, don't you? Okay, let's go.
Singing songs about them train wrecked engineers. They've invaded all the cities with their pretty corn-fed ditties, and they've got the population all in tears. They came to town from them thar hills. Now they're flashing dollar bills. Them hillbillies are Mountain Williams now. They shuck their boots and overalls and even dropped their high yalls. Them hillbillies are Mountain Williams now.
Yeah, man.
They left down home
for a microphone.
They made their dough,
on
a radio. Yo,
hey, what?
They play around among the swells, play guitars in big hotels. Them hillbillies are Mountain Williams now. Holy Lord, lady.
Hey, Dave, they descended.
They descended from that hunter, Daniel Boone.
Daniel Boone.
He's first great man, sang a mountain tune. Well, he sang it to his children. Now his great-great-great-grandchildren will be coming round the mountain pretty soon.
Pretty soon.
Daniel Boone, a mountain tune, pretty soon. Oh, they left their good old mountain shacks, and they ain't never going back. Hillbillies are Mountain Williams now. Their checkered suits and flashy ties will give their kin some surprise. Hillbillies are Mountain Williams now. They left their pals
and
a barefooted gal.
They're buying pearls
for the chorus girl.
Oh, hush it, hush it.
They ride around in motor car, make big dough like movie stars. Them hillbillies are Mountain Williams now.
Now.
Radio Hall of Fame is a lazy-talking gent from Georgia who recently latched on to a terrific song hit for which he wrote the lyrics. the hit in question and the person who asked it being Accentuate the Positive and Johnny Mercer. Song hits are nothing new to Mr. Mercer. He's knocked out the lyrics to some of America's biggest. By courtesy of no sponsor, Johnny Mercer.
Thank you, Francis. It's really fun being on the same program with you and Paul Whiteman.
Now, don't tell me you're one of those...
Yes, Francis, I'm a Whiteman alumnus, too. I got my first big break with Paul. I used to write some of the special lyrics for his aggregation.
That's right, Johnny boy. Here come the British with one of those very hot and big numbers you turned out for us.
How did you come to write Accentuate the
Positive? Well, I'll tell you, Francis. Harold Arlen, who composed the music, and I, well, we needed a kind of a novelty number to finish off our score for the picture Here Come the Waves.
Sure, it stars that old whack Bing Crosby.
Bob Hope will double your salary for that one. Anyway, we needed it, and I remembered an old expression, accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and I just took it from there.
Well, Johnny, suppose you take it from here. You've made a vocal recording of that number that's already sold over 300,000 copies. Suppose you show the folks why it sells.
Okay, Francis, I'll try and sell it. Gather round me, everybody. Gather round me while I preach some. Feel a sermon coming on me. The topic will be sin, and that's what I'm again. If you wanna hear my story, then settle back and just sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right. You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looks so dark? Man, they said we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. Oh, don't mess with Mr. In-Between. To illustrate my last remark,
Jonah in the wind, Noah in the ark.
What did they do just when everything looked so dark? Man, they said we better
accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative.
Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. You got to accentuate the positive.
Yes.
I need the negative and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, no.
Johnny, I suppose I really should introduce this next nominee for your Radio Hall of Fame in verse, but I'm afraid his creations would shame mine. Alan Reed has appeared at one time or another with almost every top comedian in radio. He is featured in RKO's Days of Glory and in the new 20th Century Fox picture, Nob Hill. While Alan Reed was on the Fred Allen Show, he created the role of Falstaff Openshaw, a radio personality so unique that Falstaff Beer sponsored him in his own show. Introducing the poor man Shakespeare and no broken reed, Alan Falstaff Reed.
Crash the cymbal, blow the trumpet. Here is Falstaff, where shall I dump it?
If you're referring to a shipment of poetry, you may dump it right here. You have brought some poems.
Oh, indubitably. I might go so far as to say in double dubitably. I have a sonnet in my bonnet, a poem in my dome, and chants in my pants. For instance, I just asked one off to a friend of mine, a top sergeant who'd been busted. Wouldst like to hear it?
Wouldst.
Goodst. List. Although you were once a sergeant, commanding many men, I bet it's nice to be a private and have some friends again.
That's well. Tell me, Falstaff, do you find poetry profitable?
Well, it was in the old days, but with the gas situation as it is, no one cares what it says on the last Burma Shave sign. You know, I go through life being frustrated. I've just written another poem about one of my frustrations. Have you heard, as I turned to wind the old Victrola, she dropped a Mickey in my Pepsi Cola?
No, I haven't.
Or how about this one? I didn't know her eye was glass. I had no intimation. But as we chatted tete-a-tete, it came out in the conversation.
No.
No? How about this? I took her into the FHA because I wanted to get her alone.
Oh. Oh, maybe you better go back to your Burma Shave sign.
You haven't heard my best one.
I'm sorry. Recite it, please.
Very well. She was a hula dancer. He was a guy from the fleet. He forgot the sugar he'd left at home when she shook her shredded wheat.
Oh, I take it all back, Falstaff. You're really a funny poet.
Well, thank you, Francis, but I do have my serious side. On my own show, it's my custom to end the program with a serious toast. And before I leave here, I'd like to do the same. On Thanksgiving Day, I offered a toast to all our loved ones who are doing their bit to make this a better world. I've had many requests to repeat this toast, and I'd like to take this opportunity to do it. I hope all of you will raise an imaginary glass with me. Let's drink a toast to a glorious host of girls and boys and men whose deeds will live a thousand years, nor be forgotten then. Every day in countless ways, and last night and tonight, they're giving heart and soul to prove that freedom is a right. That men may walk the good sweet earth upright and without fear, and say the words they choose to say, not caring who may hear. That each may worship his own God and do it in his way, and children have enough to eat with endless hours of play. That all this widespread earth may know complete and blessed peace, and death stop hurtling from the skies, and guns their roaring cease. Let's lift a glass to all who will this miracle perform. A toast to every man and girl in freedom's uniform.
Your Radio Hall of Fame continues after station identification. This is the Blue Network of the American Broadcasting Company.
The Hall of Fame changes its tempo to bring you the voice of Secretary of the Navy Forrestal. We take you now to the South Pacific.
Up the precipitous side of a 600-foot extinct volcano, so precipitous that it seemed almost vertical, went a platoon of American Marines. Even through a glass, they seemed tiny figures, scrambling skyward against a background of blue. And then a few minutes later, from the thousands of throats upon ships and on land and sea, came the sudden cry, "There goes the flag." That was how the Stars and Stripes went up on the first island of Japan's outer rim of island defenses. It was at 11 o'clock, Friday, February 23rd, 9 o'clock Thursday night, New York. We saw that flag going up halfway on the journey to shore with Lieutenant General Holland Smith of the United States Marines. It was the high point in a week of hard fighting. Fighting which continues and will continue for some days to come. The Japs don't want to lose Iwo Jima. It's the first step in a sequence of doom for their homeland. They have put into it every kind of defense, and they have had years to plan that defense. As you know by now, Iwo Jima is a tiny island, 5 miles by 2.5, coming to a tapering point at its southern end. Its terrain, unlike that of some other atolls we have taken, rises some distance from the sea. Mount Suribachi, where our flag went up on Thursday, being its highest point. Its beaches are soft volcanic ash, so loose and crumbling that one Marine said it was like trying to dig a foxhole in a bag of wheat. The Japs took full and skillful advantage of that terrain, and of the fact that there could be no tactical surprise as to where an enemy would land. We had to land on the beaches we did land on, and it had to be a frontal assault. They had planted mortars, rocket gun emplacements, and artillery all over that grim and barren island, so that there were streams of converging fire at the beachhead over which the Marines had to come scrambling in from the sea. Iwo Jima had had a powerful working over, even before the 800 ships of Vice Admiral Turner's expeditionary force launched their attack 1 week ago today. It had been hit by the bombers of the Army Air Forces for 70 days in succession. 3 days before D-Day, our battleships, our cruisers, and destroyers pounded the island with naval gunfire. Each day since then, they have poured thousands of tons of 16-inch, 14, 8-inch, and 6-inch and 5-inch shells into its defenses. Even the 40-millimeter anti-aircraft guns have been employed against that shoreline. The escort carriers put on airstrikes with torpedo planes, dive bombers, and rockets, sometimes as many as 20 missions a day. And just to help out, in between their missions of bombing Japan, the planes of the fast carriers of Admiral Spruance's Fifth Fleet, as well as some of the battleships and cruisers from that same aggregation of power, joined up after their first raid on Japan to contribute to the pounding. All of this tremendous weight of metal thrown at Iwo Jima did not extinguish its defenses. The Japs, as they had done at Tarawa and at Kwajalein, and at Saipan and Guam, had deep burrows under the shelving ridges of Mount Suribachi and caves along the rising shoreline to the north. Some of these caves had connecting galleries, and they will be digging dead Japs and some live Japs even out of them probably for many weeks to come. But in spite of all the skill of the Japanese defense, the Marines went ashore, and they have exacted since a 4-to-1 toll in death from our enemies. Let me interject here that the tremendous storm of metal thrown on Iwo Jima sharpens again the necessity for the continued output of munitions in our plants at home. Only because of that rain of metal could the island be reduced at all. Because of it, our ratio of losses is far less than it otherwise would have been. As Fleet Admiral Nimitz has said, it is our policy in the Pacific to have an unstoppable margin of power in these attacks. A steamroller, as he puts it. That steamroller saves us many lives. It will take the output, however, of many factories and hard work by all hands in those factories for months to come if we are to keep that edge of power. I came from Iwo Jima by destroyer to this island of Guam. Now, you might say, the Times Square of the Pacific. In the 7 months since we landed, Guam has been transformed. The Seabees have built 150 miles of roads. They put in airfields and built hospitals, and they're now building naval dry docks. The Navy has restored the native villages, and 20,000 of these amiable people have trooped back from the hills to take up life again in villages that have been made available to them by the Americans. Their churches have been reestablished. 6,000 of their children are attending schools with native teachers. They are violently pro-American. America is on the march in the Pacific, a march back to civilization, order, and decency. You can see it in islands like Guam and Saipan. You can see it in the glad and serene faces of the natives who again are clean and well-fed. The way back is being cleared by fighting men from every state in our Union. Blue Jackets, Marines, soldiers, and airmen. You can be confident of them, of the naval airmen who have done a tremendous job in this Iwo Jima operation, of the Marines, of the Army Air Forces, and you can be confident of their leaders, of men like Fleet Admiral Nimitz, Vice Admiral Turner, Lieutenant General Harmon, Lieutenant General Holland Smith, Major General LeMay of the 21st Bomber Command, and finally of that glorious aggregation of fighting men, the 5th Amphibious Corps of the Marines, which under Lieutenant General Harry Schmidt's direction is leading the fighting at Iwo Jima. It is a great team, and Americans can be proud of it, and of the country that produced them.
We return you to the United States.
We return you to the Hall of Fame and Jimmy Wallington.
Yes, we are now back with Philco's Radio Hall of Fame, coming to you from the Earl Carroll Theater Restaurant in Hollywood, in which today initiates Ed Archie Gardner, Nigel Bruce, Johnny Mercer, Alan Falstaff Reed, the Hoosier Hotshots, Ray Eberly, Paul Whiteman, and your mistress of ceremonies, that heartthrob from the Bob Hope program, Frances Langford, singing All of a Sudden, My Heart Sings.
All of a sudden, my heart sings. When I remember the way you dance and hold me tight, the way you kiss and say goodnight, the crazy things we say and do, the fun it is to be with you, the magic thrill that's in your touch. Breathless whirl of your embrace, your little laugh and half surprise, the starlight gleaming in your eyes, remembering all those little things, all of a sudden my heart. On your face, shown. The way you wrinkle up your nose, remembering all those little things. All of a sudden,
the Loyal Wreath has for a long time been on the receiving end of a very famous line. For it has been to him that for the last 5 years, Sherlock Holmes Rathbone has been saying, "Elementary, my dear Watson." Besides co-starring on the Sherlock Holmes radio program as Dr. Watson, he deserves your recognition for the 65 motion pictures in which he has appeared, including such screen classics as Lassie Come Home, Suspicion, The Coroner's Green, and enough Sherlock Holmes movies at Universal to reach from here to Baker Street. Another claim to fame is the fact that he was in the original cast of the Somerset Maugham's immortal stage play, The Letter, with Gladys Cooper. Mr. Bruce also soldiered in France in 1914 as one of the famous old contemptibles of the British Army. We could run on and on, but let's run on the man himself, Nigel Bruce. Fame, Nigel.
Thank you, my dear. And how's that fellow countryman of mine, your employer, Bob Hope?
You mean the English Errol Flynn? Oh, he's fine.
Good old Bob. Is he still chasing sweater girls?
Yes. I can't understand it. Nigel, as Dr. Watson, you ought to be able to answer this. Why are men so crazy about sweater girls?
I don't know. That's one mystery that I'd like to unravel. But Bob isn't the usual type of Englishman.
I should hope not.
A real Englishman is reserved, cultured, and literate, and...
Well, Nigel, pip-pip. Toodaloo, bung-ho.
Good gracious me, what is this?
Nigel, this is Archie.
Poor fellow, how unfortunate. Direct hit, I presume.
Well, you know, Mr. Bruce, it's indeed an honor to meet a fellow Britcher.
Don't tell me that you're from England.
Oh, of course, old goat. Yes, I was born in Great British. Yes, sir, square from Trafalgar, that's me.
But your accent, it's not English. You don't drop your H's.
I'm different. I just don't give an H.
Well, neither does anyone else.
Archie, just what is it you want?
Well, I thought, I've been watching this show. I thought maybe I'd hire you and Nigel. You see, we're going to do a big radio show at Duffy's.
A radio show?
Yeah, we got to build up the place, you know. It's like Swing and Sway with Sammy Kay, you know.
Well, what about Burp and Turn Green from Duffy's Cuisine?
Your English is so droll.
You mean droll?
No, I don't. Would you like to be in our show?
Well, what about it, Francis?
Well, I don't know. What kind of people do you have at Duffy's?
Well, do you know Barbara Hutton?
Will Barbara Hutton be there?
No, but a couple of dames from her old man's store, well. The better class, of course. No, we only keep them from the 10-cent counter.
Who wrote the show?
This radio show? I did.
Well, I didn't realize that you were a scrivener.
Pardon me?
I said I didn't realize that you were a scrivener.
Oh, yes, I've scribbled around a lot. And this time I got something different. A daytime radio serial, you know, with an English background.
Oh, what's the title?
Joy Jordan, Jerk Intern.
That sounds very peculiar.
Yeah, well, you hear it. Hear the synopsis. Francis, you see, in this story, you would be the Duchess of Twickenham.
Oh, a duchess?
Yeah.
What am I?
You're her husband, the Dutch. You see, your name is John Twickenham. You're a famous lawyer and barrister, you know.
Oh, a sliding John Twickenham.
Yeah, could be. Well, anyways, you two has been married for 20 years, see? Been married for 20 years and you get along great, you know? Riding on the hounds together, shooting grease in Scotland, going out in the moors, you know, and banging away at peasants. But suddenly, you begin to notice certain suspicious things about Sir John Francis. You notice the powder on his lapel, see, and a blonde hair on his waistcoat, and the lipstick on his ass-cap tie, you see. So, naturally, you say to yourself, can John be getting tired of my hot fudge? So then, one night he comes home drunk, see? And he beats you over the head with a baseball bat.
I say, old man, couldn't we make it a cricket bat?
Cricket? Okay, we'll put a monocle on a Louisville slugger. Well, anyways, Sir John emaciates you over the head, Francis, you know? Throws you down the stairs, pours hot water over you, takes a dig at you with a steel hook that was formerly the right arm of his uncle, a pirate. So, a few days of that, and your feelings start to get hurt.
Archie, don't you think you're making me a little too sensitive?
We'll thicken your skin in a minute. Now, before long, Sir John gets untrue to you, you see. He runs around with every tremaine he sees, you see. So you decide to run around with other guys. Well, nobody will go out with you, huh? So you feel maybe it's your face. So you go to a plastic surgeon. So the surgeon gives you a whole new face. And once again, you're beautiful, you know, like a caterpillar coming out of a raccoon. So then one day you're walking down Piccadilly. You're wearing the new kisser, of course. And what happens? Your own husband whistles at you, see? Well, you whistle back, and it's bigamy at first sight.
You mean I marry him again?
Yep, it becomes an eternal rectangle. You are now not only Sir John's first wife, but you are John's other wife, too. So, suddenly one day, then, he gets suspicious, you see. He looks into your mouth to see how old you are, you know. And he recognizes who it really is by the gold teeth, see. So he decides to bump you off. After dinner that night, he slips you a magnum of cyanide.
A magnum?
Yeah, full quart. Of course, he knows you're a heavy drinker, you know. Well, anyways, you drink the quart of cyanide and you die. Fatally. So, 2 days later, Sir John is nailed by the cops at the drugstore when he tries to get the deposit back on the bottle. Yep. And then comes the last scene.
Oh, thank heavens.
Yeah. Well, anyways, in the last scene, we find Sir John just as they're about to string him up, you see? And get this, see if you don't think it's beautiful. It ends with Sir John on the gallows, swinging gaily on the end of the rope, see? While a band plays Holiday for Strings. Well, what do you think? Would you like to be on the first show at Duffy's, Nigel?
Well, I don't know if it's essential. You heard about the new rule, work or fight?
Don't worry, brother. If you work at Duffy's, you'll fight.
Duffy's
hits as Lazy Bones, That Old Black Badger, Tangerine, Strip Polka, I'm an Old Cowhand, G.I. Jive, Deepest Creepers, and so many more. Johnny Mercer has written his own tribute in the lyrics he created, in the lyrics America sings. So we sing his lyrics and sing the music to which those lyrics are written. We sing Johnny Mercer, Ray Eberly, the choir, and yours truly. Paul Whiteman plays.
My mama done told me when I was a neat man. My mama done told me so. A woman will sweet talk and give you the big eye. But when the sweet talking starts, a woman's a two-faced, a worrisome thing will lead you to sing the blues.
You must have been a beautiful baby.
Hey.
You must have been a wonderful child. When you were only starting to go to kindergarten, I bet you drove the little boys wild. And when it came to winning blue ribbons, I know you showed the other kids how. I can see the judge's eyes as they handed you the prize. I bet you made the cutest bow. Oh, you must have been a beautiful baby, 'cause baby, look at you now.
Hey,
have been a beautiful baby, 'cause baby, baby, you must have been a beautiful baby, 'cause baby, look at you now.
And so the show is over, leaving, I hope, pleasant memories for you. I know it does for Ed, Archie Gardner, Johnny Mercer, Nigel Bruce, Alan Falstaff Reed, the Hoosier Hot Shots, Ray Eberle, Paul Whiteman, and yours truly, Francis Langford. And before I go, I wonder if you'll bear with me while I tell you of something I saw the other day. I saw a show. There wasn't too much of what you'd call talent in it. And yet it was a great show. You see, it was at an army hospital, and the performers were patients, 12 patients. Six of them were from the neuropsychiatric ward. One of them had both legs in plaster casts. One of them, a guitar player, was to be operated on the following day for a head wound, his third operation. And the other patients, well, they all had something wrong with them. But there they were, singing or dancing or acting in comedy skits about hospitals. The audience didn't applaud. They couldn't. They were paralytics in an army paralytic ward. Their faces applauded for them. 12 patients in an army hospital, entertaining 7 patients worse off than they were. And I think that if these wounded men could give of themselves so unselfishly, how much more we should give to back them up, them and their comrades. Giving of our money for bonds, giving of our time to stick to those war jobs, giving of our blood for the blood banks, giving of ourselves so completely to the task in hand that before long we shall ring down the curtain successfully on the biggest show of all time. Thank you and goodbye.
Families all over the country have learned that they can depend on a Philco refrigerator for trouble-free service. Women who are favorably impressed by such Philco features as the frozen food compartment, the vegetable crispers, the meat storage compartment, and the beautiful exterior now know that there is nothing more important in a refrigerator than the working parts. And it is those working parts grouped together in the Philco superpower system which have enabled the Philco refrigerator to prove itself a real friend in the thousands of kitchens by showing it can be depended upon to the limit at a time when the going is tough. That's something to remember after victory. Whatever achievements from the Philco laboratories may be revealed in the Philco refrigerator of the future, back of them will be the promise of the Philco name, famous for quality the world over. Next week, your Radio Hall of Fame moves back to New York, where it will bring you these stars made great by your recognition of their achievements: Beatrice Lilly, Bert Lahr, Peter Lorre, Artie Shaw, the Gramercy Five, and Joe Stafford. This is Jimmy Wallington saying good afternoon for Philco.
This is the Blue Network of the American Broadcasting Company.